Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bring you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hello, Houston. It's the Killer Bees on a Thursday afternoon. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. Thursday edition. What are you looking at me funny for?
Dell always does this to me. He didn't even turn on my mic. What up, H-Town? How we doing?
False start. Astros aren't doing very well. My microphone's slipped. What is going on in here today? Astros lost yesterday. The magic number still won. They lost in convincing fashion. They lost.
How'd that center field position look?
About that. Jose Siri, a play that he should make. It led to a big inning there for Tampa Bay. They would get the 3 runs in the inning, tack on a few more against Luis Garcia, who was not very good in the game yesterday for the Astros. I mean, the storyline, would you say was Luis Garcia pitching poorly? Or you're not going to say it's Jose Siri in center field, right?
That didn't lose them the game, but that should send a clear message to Dusty about how to win games in the playoffs. That, again, Siri can be a nice piece off the bench as a pinch runner or an aggressive bat, but to say that you want him to be the starting center fielder on this team in the playoffs is just grossly overblown in terms of your other options. I'm questioning how 2 nights in a row, and I get it, it's the Rays, but this is the Rays without Snell, without their best pitchers of a year ago.
That's who the Rays are, though.
Hitting the Astros 2 nights, last night for 5 innings. The night before, they got 1 hit in 5, I think, or either both of them, that came close to no hitting them for 5 innings apiece. That offense, that's unacceptable.
So you're displeased with the offense the last few games? Look, the offense hasn't played well, and it's a problem. Is it something, though, that you think lingers into the postseason? Because for me, it doesn't.
I don't think so. I'm just concerned that, again, like I told you yesterday, my biggest thing is just where's that killer instinct? Where's that desire to want to, you know, just absolutely get rolling at the right time, build momentum, get hot so that when you enter the playoffs, you feel like, I don't care who we're going to play, we should have an advantage. Right now, you look at this team, the way it's playing, the body language that it presents on the field, and then you say, look, it's a laundry list of issues. No, Garcia didn't pitch well yesterday, so that's a problem. No, the offense didn't hit the ball, so that's a problem. No, they didn't field the ball, so that's a problem. You look at all these things and go, well, if the best thing I can say is a relief pitcher that's not going to be on the playoff roster got him 4 innings and only gave up 1 run, then there's a lot of problems with this team right now.
Now, you're going to get blown out from time to time in baseball. It's just going to happen. Yesterday was one of those. And look, the Astros did win game one of the series. It's a rubber game today. If you take 2 of 3 against the Rays, that's a job well done from the best team in the American League.
And you win the series.
And you win the series. And you get happy with season series, right? I mean, or victories. You win a series, you're happy in Major League Baseball. You win a series against the best team in the American League and the best team you'll have to face if you do make a ride to the postseason. It's a job well done. So I don't want to overreact to one game. I don't want to overreact to a blowout in one game that we saw yesterday. The offense has struggled for the last few games. But look, whenever you look up and down this lineup, I'm not going to overreact to this lineup either. The thing that bothers me the most is like the sense of urgency that you don't see with this team. Like, this is still a magic number of 1. You've not clinched the division. There's 4 games left in the regular season. And I understand it's still a long shot. Mariners play 3 times. You play 4 times. It's going to take 7 perfect results for you to miss the playoffs. It's going to take you to lose 4 straight, the Mariners to win 3 in a row. And then you're looking at, obviously, game 163, right? So you have to have 8 results go exactly right for the Astros not to make the postseason. But the fact that you have 4 days left in the regular season and you still don't have anything locked up, that's bothersome. It doesn't worry me, but it bothers me.
Am I the only one, too, that when I hear all these things about the Rays wrapping up the best record in the American League and being the best team in the American League, that kind of chaps my ass, too, because all season long I felt like the Astros were the best team in the American League. The Astros had the best offense in the American League. The Astros were the team that everybody should be looking up to. And the fact that even it's just one team, I don't think that it's kind of painful to me to think that this is kind of where I'm going at with the level of underachievement, like the under emotion, the under drive to say, you know what, we're better than everybody else. And I know that Astros fans drinking the orange cooler are going to be like, relax, come on. I mean, they'll flip the switch when the playoffs start. They'll be fine. How do you know that? And the fact that, like I said, all season long, when you got to the playoffs and other very important times in the season, the thing that I wanted is to have more answers than questions. It's like at the trade deadline. If the only thing that had to be addressed was the bullpen, you're in such a better position than most every other team in the league that have multiple holes across their lineup, their pitching, their defense, different things like that. But instead, you only had one. And you did a hell of a job, you thought, at the time, and no one could have predicted the future, of what you did to change that. Now you're going into the playoffs and saying, well, it's not just the bullpen anymore. Now you've got questions with starting pitching. And now, because COVID came into play, as well as injuries to Odorizzi's foot and guys coming back from injuries, you're not solidified in your starting pitching, which was a strong point. Your offense has been shut out for two games in a row for the first five innings by no-name pitchers or pitchers that are has-beens. So you're looking at these things going, I just need those question marks to be solved before they start playing for real.
Yeah, it's amazing how good Rasmussen's been since he got traded to Tampa Bay and the deal that they had at the start of the season. Look, the Astros do have a lot of concerns right now as you have 4 days left of the regular season, four games left in the regular season for the Astros with the magic number of one. Like, you're a little bit unsure now what that starting rotation is going to look like. Luis Garcia, who you factored in to be one of those four guys that will get a start in the divisional round, he had a bad outing. He had a bad outing at home, which has been rare for him. Do you let one bad outing kind of influence your decision of what Dusty Baker will do in the playoffs? I doubt it. He'd still be one of my four guys that I throw out there.
But is he your fourth guy instead of your third guy now, more so? And Urquidy,
he's been my fourth guy the whole way. I've been pretty steadfast with Jose Urquidy being my third guy. But I've also been steadfast in the logic. You don't announce a Game 3 and a Game 4 starter until after Game 2. Like, if you're in a position where you have to use Luis Garcia, if you're in a position where you have to use Jose Urquidy in Game 1 or 2 because maybe you have a big lead early and Lance McCullers throws 100 pitches through four innings, like, you might bridge that gap with a longer guy. That's how important those playoff games are. So I wouldn't announce Urquidy and Luis Garcia as my Game 3 and Game 4 starters until I'm sure that I'm done with Game 2 and I haven't used either one of them, because if I have to use one of them in Game 1 or 2, I certainly would. But that's my pecking order right now. Lance McCullers, Framber Valdez, Jose Urquidy, and Luis Garcia going forward. You also have a little bit of questions with the bullpen. Like, the bullpen has always left Houston Astro fans feel uneasy with this year's team. Ryan Pressly has been solid. I still think that there's a little bit of doubt with Astro fans when Ryan Presley's into a game that might not be warranted. Kendall Graveman's been solid. I don't think Kendall Graveman with the Astros has been as good as Kendall Graveman with the Mariners. And right now he's away from the team too. And that's not something that's going to force him to miss a lot of time, and he'll be back soon. But still, he's not here right now. Pressly also has the knee injury that you're worried about. Ryan Stanek is your third best reliever. So there's a lot of question marks with this team entering the postseason, and a lot of times wins can make fans overlook those question marks and those concerns. But with the Astros playing poorly as of late and not winning a lot of games as of late, and since that West Coast road trip, you know, those concerns kind of come to light a little bit more.
And everything gets magnified, right? Because the one thing in getting blown out last night that we didn't get to see was Dusty alluded to the fact that Pressly would be available, and we thought it was more like an excuse for the reasons why he handled things the way he did and brought Maton back in for the ninth the night before, but we don't know to what level Presley's knee is bothering him, because we didn't get into a save situation where the Astros had a lead where we could see Ryan Pressly come out of the bullpen and see what you got. But again, more question marks, because I know now Graveman's on paternity leave, but you know what? He's still missing time. We knew that he was already being overworked because they were suddenly worried about him working two games in a row, though he was a relief pitcher all year, and you figure that's, you know, just par for the course for a relief pitcher, but evidently that was an issue too. So you've got even more question marks there. Now, the only thing that you can feel like solidifies the bullpen more is the fact that because the rotation isn't going to involve Odorizzi or Javier or Greinke, that you can have guys that can enhance your bullpen more. However, because all three of them seemed to need a whole lot of time to get warm, get loose, and get ready to go and get all the way up, that you don't know how you can use them. And if you do use them, are you losing them then for the next couple of days until they recover because they're starters, not relievers by nature? More question marks. This is what I'm talking about. I'm not worried about them making the playoffs. Now, I am a little concerned. I'm not. No, this is funny because a day ago you were not. But here's the thing. I'm not worried about them winning the division, and I'm not worried about them making the playoffs. I do have a concern that the White Sox can still catch them, and something that they desperately need, which is home field against a team that plays horrible on the road, has to get done. That's why the thing that bothers me the most is the sense of urgency. I don't see a fire lit under their ass. I see runs being scored, and they're going, eh. And I don't see any intensity, and I don't feel like they're pressing a little bit to go, we got to get this done. Even Siri making the mistake in the outfield yesterday, he didn't look like he had a bit of room. He was like, man, his body language was like, no big deal.
There's like part of that is baseball, but it shouldn't be the final week of the regular season as you're trying to lock up a division, as you're trying to lock up home field advantage in the ALDS. The sense of urgency, like they haven't flipped the switch. And I think that's something that you can point to at the Astros this season that is a fair assessment of who they are. They'll get swept at home against Baltimore, and then they'll play some of the better teams in the league and take two of three on the road. They have the ability during the regular season, it seems, that they flip the switch and they can play whenever they decide that it's time to play. And maybe that's something that they'll do in the playoffs. They'll flip the switch. But that's always a dangerous game to play, though, because that one time you go for it, you think that you can just flip it and turn it on, you're in this rut that the Astros seem to be on. Where it just doesn't flip over. Can we talk about Jose Siri a little bit in center field? Like the conversation that he is your everyday center fielder, the conversation that he's going to get playoff starts in center field. We can go ahead and dismiss that, right? Like 0-3 at the plate, and I hate nitpicking one game over 162, but it is what you're doing for me lately. And Dusty Baker is going to play the hunch. He's going to play the feel. Like, when you don't trust a guy to catch the ball in center field, and I think that was a tough play yesterday to an extent. Like, I don't know if that's an error, per se.
He overran it and took his eyes off of it.
Bad play. Bad play. I get it. You expect Chaz McCormick to make that play. You expect Jake Myers to make that play. I think it's an above-average play if you make it, but that's a play you have to have, especially in the playoffs.
The catch rate, Plummer said, was 90%.
Okay, I didn't catch that.
90%.
That's high.
That means...
That's not as hard a play as I thought it was.
That's on you, Chief. That's on you. You took your eyes off of it. You have communication issues with the... And here's the thing. Much like you mentioned with the at-bats, too. When he struck out on an awful three-pitch strikeout early in the game, he didn't look like he gave a rat's ass. Yep. He was walking back like, yeah, okay, no big deal. It's one thing if that's Barry Bonds with that kind of laissez-faire attitude walking away after it didn't work out in one at-bat. This is a kid that should be like going 100 miles an hour, 100% all the time to prove he belongs on this team and on this playoff roster. And that's not what I'm seeing.
Yeah, he's... And Pancho says he needs some maturity. He's a 26-year-old guy. Let's consider
that's
that. He's
too.
Not necessarily a prospect. He's kind of more of a 4A player than a prospect at this point. Although I think he has a future in Major League Baseball as like a fifth outfielder type. I don't ever think he's going to be like an everyday regular.
You don't?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I mean, he's bounced around too many teams.
But you know what? Sometimes it's a late bloomer and they find it eventually. I think he can be an everyday outfielder somewhere.
I don't think it's going to be here. Yeah, I don't think for like a playoff team he's an everyday outfielder. I just don't see it. I mean, he's 26 years old. He's come up to the Astros late. I think he has some tools. Like, he's got pop. He's got speed. I don't know if he's like the complete package, though. He reminds me kind of like a Carlos Gomez light. But not a starter in the playoffs. I still have him on my 26-man roster, but not somebody who I expect to start any games in the postseason.
A week or two ago, we were talking about the outfield of the future being Myers, Siri, and Tucker.
No, I said Chaz, not Siri.
Okay. I just think I'm not going to write him off as being a potential guy that can start for you in the future in one of the corner outfield positions. But he's got to maintain the pop. He's got to play better defense. He's got to look like he's engaged and wants to do this. But I'm not ready to say that he's never going to be a starter for this team or another team in Major League Baseball. I just think that there's a whole lot more work to do than, again, people get enamored by small sample sizes. He had that outburst when he started to really break out offensively, and then he was stealing some bases and showing some speed going first to third, and people thought, whoa.
Yep. I mean, he's got some tools. I mean, he's got pop. He's got excellent speed. I just don't put a lot of stock in a guy that's really getting his first cup of coffee in the bigs at 26 years old. The batting race in the American League, Yuli has a pretty comfortable lead now, 317 average. Vlad Guerrero, 3-for-13. Michael Brantley made his return yesterday, had an offer. He's at 312. Looks like he's out of the race. One thing to watch from the White Sox, Carlos Rodon, he pitched that tune-up game yesterday. All he did was throw 5 shutout innings, gave up a hit, walked a couple, struck out 4. He did only throw 69 pitches, though. So is this somebody that, like, they're getting their stud back, at what length? Like, is he going to throw 80, 85 pitches in a playoff game against the Astros next week? That's probably his maximum, right? So I think there's some good news, bad news to take from an Astros perspective there. One, the bad news, Rodon is back, and they have one of their studs back into the rotation. The good news is I don't think he's going to be somebody that goes, like, deep into a game.
Well, again, and it's hard for the common fan sometimes to understand what we're talking about with being stretched out as a starting pitcher and how quickly you can lose that and what it takes to get it back. And much like Zach Greinke, at least you know the team you're playing is dealing with at least one pitcher, if not two, dealing with this a similar circumstance where once you get out of your routine and get out of throwing multiple times in a week and doing the things that's necessary, if nothing else, it doesn't change your effectiveness per se, but it does change the amount of innings that you're and pitches you're able to do it for. So it's something that you have to pay attention to.
How do you feel about the Astros, Houston? Are you worried with four games left in the regular season? Are you bothered that the Astros still don't have the division title locked up? Do you think we're crazy even bringing up the idea? Let us know. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Also at Twitch, at twitch.tv/ESPN975. And you can find us on Twitter. He's at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Your reaction to how you feel about the Astros with 4 days left in the regular season. Also, new news on Deshaun. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You and I both know that Philadelphia is in that mix for the Deshaun Watson thing. That's a real thing. You know, from everything I know, the owner has given them the green light as far as Howie Roseman and company to make that deal if it's right.
There you go. Chris Sims, Mike Florio. Discussing if Deshaun Watson's in play for the Eagles. There's people out there, Black Sports Online, think that the Dolphins and the Eagles are competing with one another to trade for Deshaun Watson before the November 2nd trade deadline, which is a little over a month away.
It's exactly what I told you we shouldn't talk about anymore. What I told you that I'm tired of. I told you you'd have to start paying fines in the kangaroo court jar every time you did this, and you didn't even wait for the first hour to be in the rearview mirror before you decided to drop those two damn words in the middle of what could be another good show for us. Stop talking about this guy.
It's relevant.
It's so
it's
flippant. How is it relevant? He's not going anywhere. Just because some other honk, national honks that want clicks are talking about the fact, you know, he still could be traded. Hey, Jay Glazer. Well, you know what? The Texans may be willing to take less now. Okay, but are they? Will they? Is this going to happen? Do they know what's going to happen in the court cases? Why are we still talking about this?
I can understand it from Glazer's perspective because I really believe my theory that he's trying to scratch an agent's back who scratches his back, and that's how that whole vicious cycle of news happens. The Florio stuff bothers me because Florio just flat out bothers me, period, even before the Deshaun Watson stuff. But it seems like this is automatically going to be a segment on their show every single day where they're talking about what could happen with Deshaun Watson. And I heard, who was it, Andrew Brandt, he was on with the Wheelhouse the other day. He's like, look, this who in their right mind would trade for Deshaun Watson before the November 2nd trade deadline, knowing everything that he has going on with the 20-something civil cases, with a grand jury that can indict him really at the snap of a finger? You don't know where that's going to come, although it has been reported that that is not expected to happen before the November 2nd trade deadline. But
why are we talking about it?
Well, I think it's funny to kind of pick on Florio.
I don't. Why do you not like him so much?
He's just kind of smug to me. Like he's very smug. Like he kind of. I think he kind of like makes things up, or maybe makes them like.
You mean like Adam Schefter?
I don't think Schefter really makes things up.
Really?
I know. There's been times whenever like
recently draft night.
Yeah. I think Schefter is fed stuff, but he's not making up what he's fed. Like he might get played. You know what I mean? Like he might be getting played, but I don't think he's necessarily like making up stories that he hears or sources that he hears. I think Florio kind of like I don't know the right word to say here, but he kind of makes everything way more dramatic than it really is. Like, Deshaun Watson, you and I are in agreement that he doesn't get traded before November 2nd. Yeah. Yet Florio's talking about it every single day and talking about the possibilities of where he could go and what he could get traded for and who's all in play. Like, he has a way of almost, like, sensationalizing the news of Deshaun Watson. And the reason he does that is because Deshaun Watson's a big name. Like, if you consider anybody, I don't think he has a chance to get traded, but names that float around with trade rumors, Deshaun Watson has the biggest name. He's a national guy that has this national show. So, yeah, he's going to talk about Deshaun Watson because he thinks it's ratings, he thinks it's clicks, he thinks it's impressions, and I think that's how Florio rolls.
I don't think he's the only one, but I think you're forgetting the fact that the other thing is that long word that's draped together with a .com, and it's called Pro Football Talk. And that's why he does the talking that he does, too. Because, again, he's just trying to drive more people to the website, more people to what Mike Florio's all about. He's on NBC, so he's got a platform. Chris Sims the same way. The same way Chris Sims went out of his way to make sure that everybody thought that he thought that Trevor Lawrence wasn't the best quarterback in the first overall pick in the draft was simply done so that he could get more attention. Everyone's looking to try and capitalize on this guy you're talking about from the Texans again. I'm to the point now where I'm not going to mention his name anymore. But they're all doing it so that as a spinoff, they get more run. They get more play. They get more clicks. I'm not going to partake in it anymore. That's why I told you should be fined every time you bring it up. Because we exhausted it when there was some kind of legitimate content during training camp. Was he practicing? Why was he practicing? What was he doing? What the hell are they doing? Why didn't they do this? Why didn't the league do that? But the fact that we're just regurgitating the same, oh, he could go, oh, trade deadline, oh, they're lowering their price tag, none of it has any kind of substance. And it's just, that's what annoys me.
What are you going to do when he gets traded before November 2nd?
Applaud and say, thank God we don't have to have that crutch anymore that everybody wants to use to talk about.
713-780-3776. Any truth or any way that you believe Watson gets traded before November 2nd? What's your Watson fatigue level at today? 713-780-3776. Had a few texts on the Astros, and what is your concern level right now for the Astros? Are you worried? Are you bothered? Are you annoyed? Are we going crazy even discussing the idea? 2541 says, I have a problem with Dusty experimenting this late in the season.
And agreed.
Look, like, I didn't mind it last week because you thought you would have it clinched by September 30th. So, like, let's see if Jose Siri can give you nine innings in center field. Let's experiment with Jake Myers in left. Let's toy with the batting order. Like, that stuff made sense last week when it looked like you were going to roll the division title. But here you are, 4 days left in the regular season. You have nothing clinched at all. The idea of experimenting should be long gone. You should have entered this week with the experimental idea far from your mind.
I was not okay with it last week, and I told you so. I am getting tired of the fact that this is not spring training leading into the regular season. This isn't early in the year trying to figure out what the depth you have is on this roster and where who you can trust later in the year. This is the time. It's go time. This is the time that you are gearing up and getting a well-oiled machine clicking on all cylinders so that they steamroll into the playoffs. They don't limp in. And so now I'm not worried about the division, but I have deep concerns about the White Sox and the home field, and I shouldn't have to feel that way. This team was in control of their entire season all year long. And as much as you have been the Dusty critic, I am the guy that points out how annoyed I get when he wins the first two games of a series, and instead of keeping this train moving down the track, for that third game, he decides to completely reshuffle the batting order, play all the bench players at one time, tell me and try and convince the world that certain guys need rest when they don't, just so that for some reason he can play his hunches. Let him play the horses if he wants to play his hunches. I'm tired of screwing around. I almost said a different word, but I'm tired of screwing around with this team. It's time to get this thing on the right track and moving in the right direction quickly so that they do have some momentum going into the playoffs.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Flipping back to the Bills-Texans game on Sunday, which should just be riveting television. Josh Allen, he's been trained up pretty well to respect the opponent. Here's that time of the week where we look at the Bills and see what they're saying about the Texans and just how true that they are. Here's the Buffalo quarterback about the Texans.
We got to go out there, put our best effort against a really good team that they got. And I know all the preconceived notions that they had coming in this season, all the off-season stuff that they dealt with, and they come out and they are a team. I'll tell you what, they play extremely hard. They got some really good players, really talented players on defense. They do a really good job of taking the ball away. So, again, whatever people want to say, it's a week-to-week league, and this is a team that is going to win a lot of games, and we got to be extremely prepared for them and put our best foot forward and prepare a game plan and go out there and execute it the best that we can.
He'll tell us what. That's a team that plays hard. That's whenever you know a team's not very good, right? Like, there's nothing he can point to say that that's a strength of the team. Like, there's no Deshaun Watson, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He's throwing all over the yards. We have to slow him down. There's no, like, J.J. Watt, somebody you have to be careful with because he's a three-time defensive player of the year. You have nothing to say, so what do you say? An NFL team plays hard. Okay, that's awesome.
But you know what? It's better than the alternative, which some guys still haven't figured out, which is if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all, because all you're doing is giving the other team billboard material, where a team that's supposed to get their doors blown off suddenly gets focused and has a little extra gas in the tank because of the fact that you've gassed them up, and then you got to be careful. So at least he knows from that regard not to say too much and not to say the wrong thing.
What are you going to do, though? Like, if you put bulletin board material on the Texans bulletin board, like, what kind of fear is that going to strike in you?
Well, here's what I'd say about that, Jeremy. You would assume that the team still wins the game, right? The better team would win. But with that little extra, sometimes it comes after the whistle. Or sometimes a Josh Allen, if he lipped off after a play, it may be a late hit to you. It could be something that affects the rest of his season. And that's the thing that you want to avoid. You don't want the unnecessary extra that goes with bulletin board material when you know if you just play your cards right and execute your game plan, you're better than the Houston Texans.
All right, when we return, a war of words between Belichick and Arians ahead of Brady's homecoming. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Text saying the 0123 to RJ said, my Watson tolerance is gone. I'm simply tired of hearing about that bum.
Amen.
I almost turn the radio off anytime his name is
brought up. Yeah, listen to that. Then don't do it anymore.
Pressing stories in the city of Houston must be talked about on the Killer Bees.
Pressing. You said pressing.
On ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Or are you Mike Florio? You know what? You kind of look like Little Mike. I'm going to call you Little Mike Florio from
now on. I look like Little Mike?
Yeah. You're a Little Mike Florio.
I'm JB Glazer. I mean, look, what if he does get traded before November 2nd? I am going to make you eat so much crow if he gets traded before November 2nd.
No.
It's going to be glorious. I'm hoping it happens now at this point.
And by the way, dumbass 713 on text, stop talking about Watson already. In other news, Aaron Rodgers, Joel. No, if there's one person that's tired of talking about that too, but oh, by the way, was right when he did actually talk about it, shut the hell up and listen. You'll learn something. It's that simple. Move on. Hey, what do you got next, Mike? Little Mike Florio?
I appreciate he listening to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Bill Belichick and Bruce Arians getting in a little war of words. You know, Brady, Belichick, they're playing on Sunday Night Football, if you haven't noticed. Adele, that whole thing, you know, see you from the other side, whatever, whatever, whatever. There's been
Rich Paul's girl?
Is that Rich Paul's girl now? That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, she lost a lot of weight. Now she's with Rich Paul.
Oh, is that why she's dating Rich Paul? Is that what you're insinuating?
I have no idea. I'm just telling you the facts and the storyline. He might, but she lost a lot of weight. Did she not? Yes. And now she's dating Rich Paul. I gave you the accurate timeline of what happened.
But the way you said it with your tone and inflection, want people to believe that maybe she's dating Rich Paul because she lost weight, which is not the case, I don't think.
I didn't insinuate that at all.
Give the woman her due.
Usually it's me the one that's nitpicking.
And
today,
she has very strong lungs. That could factor in.
Really good singer.
Yeah.
Really good singer. Here was Bill Belichick talking about Tom Brady. You know, they've said that he didn't want to have that face-to-face with Brady. Belichick denies that.
Bill, it was reported this morning that you preferred to speak over the phone with Tom when he delivered the news he'd be leaving the organization in March of 2020 and didn't want to meet in person. Was that true?
No, that's not true. And I heard a few things about, you know, this book, and sounds like it's a lot of, you know, second, third, and fourth hand comments. So, but I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to focus on this game and try to prepare for the Bucs.
I love listening to Bill Belichick meet with the media.
Do you?
I really do. I think it's highly entertaining. Do you not?
I mean, he's just so, I get annoyed just listening to him because he's just so grumpy and
I think it's
great. Arrogant and I mean, and again, Brady's the one that at least finally was honest about it. But the fact that everybody listening from the media to the fans think that this is like being sworn into court with your hand on a Bible where you have to be honest and then find out 99% of what they tell you is just complete BS anyway.
Yeah, here was Belichick a little bit later in that press conference kind of scoffing at the question that was mentioning how difficult it is to defend Tom Brady.
Bill, would you consider Tom a tough quarterback to defend, and if so, why?
Do you consider him a tough quarterback to defend?
Yeah.
Is that the question?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just... Tough as any quarterback there is or ever has been. Enough said. I mean, his numbers are incredible. He's about to pass the all-time passing record. He's done more than any other player at that position in whatever measurement you want to take, whether it's yards, completions, touchdowns, championships, you know, you name it. So put anything out there you want. It doesn't get any tougher than him.
What's not to love about that? Kind of going back and forth with the lady there asking the question, is Tom Brady tough to defend?
We just got done talking about the fact that, one, the smart coaches don't give bulletin board material, which he never is going to do because he doesn't want to get into any of that anyway.
Uh-huh.
But the last thing he's going to do is feed the fire of a frenzy that's already been created by Sunday Night Football and the Brady back to New England narrative. He was quick on the first question of the day to make sure that people didn't forget Gronk's coming back, too. It's weird that if you see the expatriates are all coming back for this game.
Antonio Brown's coming back, too.
Yeah, he's already back. He's practicing. But, like,
A homecoming, because he played that one game in New England.
A homecoming. It was big, yeah. He was there. You don't blink. You missed him. Freaking Ninkovich is saying all these expatriates want to be there. It's a freaking regular season game.
Huge game, Sunday Night Football. Adele is singing the tease for it. Now, Belichick did give a little bit of bulletin board material to Tampa Bay. Here's what Belichick said about Brady pretty much running the same passing game as he was in New England.
It's the offense he's run his whole career. Well, I mean, it hasn't evolved here, but, you know, the running game is the running game. The running game is different, but the passing game is the passing game. That's pretty similar. I mean, you could call almost every play from the flare control to the protection to, you know, similar to the way we do it.
There you go. Brady saying that Belichick saying that Brady carried the New England offense to Tampa Bay with Bruce Arians to win that Super Bowl.
The fact of the matter is that execution and players win games and make plays happen. Everybody knows a majority of plays that are run, with the exception of like McVay and Shanahan and guys that keep throwing new wrinkles into it. But there are still traditional football plays in everybody's playbook. And, you know, Belichick's telling you that from a defensive coordinator perspective. He's seen it all for the most part. So I think that's basically kind of the road he's trying to really lead you on. But again, everybody's going to take everything said this week from both sides and read between the lines and think they got something.
One more from Bruce Arians, because he was asked about Belichick's comment about how they're doing the same things in Tampa Bay.
Belichick talked earlier today. He was very complimentary of you and your team. He was asked about how this offense compares to what Brady ran in New England, and he said totally 100% that it has his imprint on it. He said the running game different, but the passing game is the passing game. It's pretty similar. You could call almost every play from the flare control to the protection. Do you worry at all that if it's that similar, that their staff knows it well?
Well, I think they copied a lot of ours, so it's probably the same.
There you go. Bruce Arians said, no, you were the one copycatting. That journalist, by the way, that asked that question kind of did some liberties with what Belichick said. I didn't hear Belichick say that 100% had his imprint on what they're doing there in Tampa Bay. So that reporter trying to stir it up there a little bit. There's some odds on what Belichick and Brady are going to do after the game. You know, you're going to see Arians and Belichick shake hands. Do you see any sort of Brady-Belichick embrace? You can bet on this if you'd like. Brady Belichick hug embrace only +200. Brady Belichick shake hands only at +200. Brady Belichick shake hands embrace both of them with the handshake and the hug. That's +200. No touching at all at +220. And a high five, good value at +2000 if you want to bet that after the game between Belichick and Brady.
I was going to say before the game, Brady's already let you know if he's a man of his word. And again, he's talking to the media. That he's going to be focused to where no matter who comes, Josh McDaniels, anybody that comes up and wants to say, hey, Tommy, how's it going from the New England side? I'm sure he's going to be pretty standoffish. and maybe just completely stonewall him. I think after the game, especially if he wins, that's the thing that's the most annoying about Brady. When he loses, but I guess that's, you know, that's the way it should be. When he loses, he wants no part of the post-game conversation with the other quarterback or anything like that. When he wins, he wants to be enduring big brother to Drew Brees and Peyton Manning and Rodgers and all the guys that he beats. But like, huh? Hey, well, you know what? When Jalen Ramsey wants to be chatty after he just gave it to him, he doesn't really have a whole... Yeah, yeah, okay, all right.
I respect you, too.
Yeah, but I think that's the biggest thing. Any of the kind of interactions are going to be after the game.
Yeah, it's after the game bad. It's an after the game problem.
But pregame, when both teams are on the field, you see it all the time. I mean, you see it all, and I see it, obviously, with the games that I watch, but you take guys that used to be on the coaching staff or used to play with a certain team, and they're playing that team, and it just happened with the Packers against Detroit with Williams, the running back, and he came back to Green Bay. And so pregame, it was all kinds of hugs and handshakes and all that other stuff. But this is different. This is post-game. Too much emotion. This is too many years spent together. And again, because the media is making it a circus, it's going to be postgame when it's all finally behind us.
So do you think hug? Do you think shake hands? Do you think both? Do you think no touching at all?
This is Bill Belichick.
What side are you playing?
I would tend to believe he doesn't hug his freaking girlfriend or whatever she is. Hardly at all either. And he's not a high fiver either. I think there'll be a handshake possibly. Yeah. But I don't know because Belichick's not going to seek him out, especially if they lose. And I don't know that Brady's going to want to seek him out even if he wants to rub it in.
I think they'll shake hands because of the perception and because of how much attention is going to be given to that. So I'm going shake hands at plus 200. I don't see either one of them hugging, especially after a loss. I just feel like they have to do something.
There is a none of the above. Because I think if the Patriots lose, which I'm assuming
that
they will.
No touching plus 220.
Yeah, I think Belichick, if they lose, even when it's one of his disciples, he's quick to head to the tunnel and doesn't want to wait around to even shake hands. I think once he interacts with Bruce Arians after the game, if he even does that, I don't think he's going to hang around looking for Tom.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Tom that goes up to him. They do have a quick handshake and call it a night. LeSean McCoy signing a one-day deal with the Philadelphia Eagles is going to retire with Philadelphia, two-time All-Pro, who at his heyday was one of the better running backs in the NFL. And it's another example that NFL running backs and their lifespan in the NFL does not last all that long, especially when they're at their peak. But a very good career for LeSean McCoy announces his retirement today. Coming up at 1 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Stanford Steve of SportsCenter, the Scott Van Pelt SportsCenter, also has a podcast as well. He'll be joining us at 1 o'clock. But when we return, Michael Brantley's return and what the Astro outfield options are as we head to the postseason, hopefully. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the people at MyBookie. It's MyBookie.ag. Look, you always have a hankering to put some money on a game. Maybe you got a hunch. Maybe you want to make a game that isn't very interesting more interesting, and you'll pay more attention to it by putting some money down. If you're going to put money down on a game, there's only one place to go. It's MyBookie.ag, because unlike the other sites that you can possibly put your bets in with, MyBookie is going to keep your money safe. When you win, they're going to pay you, and they're going to constantly do things and have promotions that are going to be easy for you to get involved in and have a chance to win at, and they don't cost you a thing. At MyBookie.ag right now, the promotion is new customers, existing customers, and previous customers. Your next deposit up to $1,000 is going to be doubled by MyBookie. Therefore, you've got more money in your account, you've got more money to bet on games, and you have more chances to win. All you got to do is put in the code BET975 when you enter money into your account or sign up. It's really that simple. And then once you're signed up, there are all kinds of promotions. There's live in-game betting. If you placed a bet, it's not going well and you want to get in and maybe hedge it or do some other things, you can do it through mybookie.ag. And you can bet on your laptop, your phone, your tablet. It's easy, it's fun, and you can make games more interesting as the afternoons and evenings progress. We've got Thursday night football tonight. We've got a weekend of college and pro football games to discuss. Not only discuss and talk about them, bet on them. And then they become even more entertaining and more interesting. Check it out today. Sign up at mybookie.ag, put in that promo code BET975, and that extra money will be credited to your account instantly so you can start putting it down on games. Rollover rules apply to your bonus deposit. See website for details. But bet on anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
Sunday on Compass Media Networks. Coverage of the NFL. The 2-0 Las Vegas Raiders go for a third straight victory.
to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Michael Brantley returned to the Astros lineup yesterday after a long absence, his first time that he played since September 11th, and he was 0-for, didn't have a great day at the plate, which, look, to be expected. How he came back from the IL the first time that he was on the IL this season and just, like, was hitting close to 400 for, like, a couple of weeks, that's not realistic. I mean, timing, hitting is so much timing, and who was the guy who said, was it Pete Rowe, or no, it was Ted Williams, I think, that said hitting is timing and then pitching is breaking up the timing of the hitter. And Brantley was 0-for-4 yesterday. I think that when they started playing him is good news, because I wanted him to get regular season at-bats. Because if you don't get regular season at-bats, then you're rusty for the playoffs, right? You need to see live pitching. You need to see good pitching. And the fact that Brantley was 0-for-4 yesterday, look, it's not awesome, but just seeing live pitching, I think, is good news for Michael Brantley.
What the hell's wrong with you?
What are you talking about?
The guy that you like to rip on, and you have an open invitation with this very subject, mm-hmm. because I'm going to now give you what you should have already given me, which is, Brantley, you're right, totally agree. It's a complete, like, rarity that what he did last time he came off the IL with no kind of rehab starts in Sugar Land just comes in and immediately starts picking up where he left off. That shouldn't have been expected. It shouldn't be expected by us. It shouldn't be expected by the media. You know who it shouldn't be expected by? Dusty Baker. So you know what he should have done? The same thing that he does with people for no good reason. Juggle the lineup so that Michael Brantley isn't batting second until he gets a few games under his belt, gets back in the swing of things, back in the feels of what's going on the major league level with pitching before you expect anything from him. Don't bat him in the two hole. And oh, by the way, you're making all these faces like you have gas, but at the same time, you have to be realistic in the fact that this team didn't get a hit for five innings.
Yeah, he was one of a lot of guys that were hitless in the lineup yesterday. I have no problem with Brantley batting second straight off of the injured list. Like, he's one of your better hitters. He's one of your better contact hitters. He's kind of ideal for that two spot against righties. I have no problem with Brantley batting in the two spot in yesterday's game. I don't blame anything that Dusty Baker did yesterday. Like, the Astros got blown out. Like, that's one of those games you just try to mop up. You get your stars out of the game, make sure nobody gets hurt. Like, the Astros didn't show up to the game, and Rasmussen had their number in that game yesterday. Here was Dusty Baker, though, kind of curious what he said in his post-game remarks about Michael Brantley.
Belichick talked earlier.
That wasn't Dusty Baker.
He hadn't been out there in a while, and, you know, he was on the ball, you know, most of the night, but you know, much like Carlos when he was out, and much like Bregman when he was out, you know, much like Yuli when he was out, and also much like Alvarez when he was out. So, I mean, just it's hard to just come back in if he hadn't been out there. I mean, it's real hard. So, you know, not worried about Brantley. We just got to get him some reps to get him back straight.
Okay, I heard that. Whenever I listened to that the first time, it sounded like he said rest and not reps. I was going to criticize what Dusty Baker said, because you get a guy that needs rest after missing that many days, after being gone since September 11th. Look, getting him back into the lineup, you still have four games left in the regular season. You want him to be in the lineup every single one of those games, because reps right now, critical for Dusty Baker. And if I'm evaluating Michael Brantley, I don't really care how many hits he's getting in the game. What's the primary concern is that he's getting reps, he's seeing live pitching, he's working on that timing, that way he can be ready to go for the playoffs.
But then how can you not think that it would be more advantageous to this team? He does it with every other player in the lineup. He does it with his best players. He'll slide Bregman. He'll slide Correa. He'll slide Yordan. He slides Yuli. Why the hell wouldn't he intelligently, and would not face any criticism for doing so, slide Brantley down the lineup?
You said you're not worried about the Astros missing the playoffs, right? It's not a concern.
They're going to win the division.
All
they're right. Going to get the one more game.
So I think it's fair that Dusty Baker thinks that they're also going to win the division. And he just talked about how many reps Brantley needs to see. You're going to get more reps at the top of the order. You know Brantley's going to be in the two hole, at least against righties in the postseason. So why not go with the lineup
because
that you're going to have in the playoffs? I have no problem with him batting
second. If
they
score runs, he can get more at-bats too. Look, I'm not worried about the amount of at-bats he gets. I'm worried about, from an offensive perspective, this team being productive, scoring runs. And until he's back to his normal self, and you're not rushing him back as he's trying to indicate to you, then don't rush him right up into the two hole where it kind of puts a monkey wrench in the momentum of the top of your lineup and the fact that you still have to be productive to win baseball games, whether it be one more game or as many games as you want to try and win between now and the end of the regular season. I just think that if you're being a smart manager and it's his first game back, I wouldn't throw him right in the two hole, just like most of the guys when they come back from injury or rehab start or they've been out for any time, Dusty doesn't put them right back where they normally hit. He normally puts them more down in the lineup so that they can get comfortable, and then a game or two in, he'll start adjusting. He adjusts for the sake of adjusting. Why wouldn't you intelligently adjust in this case and move Mike down a little bit so that it doesn't affect the productivity of the top of the lineup? And it gives everybody a chance to just kind of fit, you know, get back in the swing of things, literally.
I think the three reasons that he did that was, one, he's going to have Brantley in the two hole against righties, probably against lefties, too, in the postseason. Two, you have protection in the lineup, too. If you're batting second, then all of a sudden you have Bregman and Yordan and Yuli batting after you. So you get some protection. You think you're going to get some good pitches to hit. And he wants Brantley to see the reps. He wants him to have as many at-bats as he can going into the postseason. What do you think, Houston? 713-780-3776. Should Dusty ease back Michael Brantley as he comes off of the IL ahead of the postseason? How about the other options in the outfield for the Astros? If you're assuming that, you know, Brantley's going to be a permanent DH, the fact that he can't play the outfield, I think, is a little bit of a problem for the Astros, because now you can't even move like Kyle Tucker to center field if you wanted to go with your all-offense lineup, where normally you're playing Yordan in left, you would have Tucker in center, you would have Brantley in right field, something we saw a little bit after the Miles Straw trade after the deadline. We haven't seen it in a while, and I think Brantley, the fact that he has a bad knee and he might not even be able to play the field, eliminates any possible discussion of going with your all-offensive outfield. So it looks like you're going to see the center fielder, whether it's Chaz McCormick, Jake Meyers, or Jose Siri. How do you feel about it today? We saw Siri get a start yesterday, you know, botched that ball in right center field, should have caught it, would have been out of the inning. Instead, it prolonged the inning. Rays would score three runs, and they would never trail again. They would never look back. You still totally on the Jake Meyers train?
I am, personally. I'll hear your argument for Chaz, and I understand that, you know, I'm not going to be mad if Chaz is the starting center fielder for game one of the playoffs. But I am convinced Siri's not your starting center fielder, and I'm convinced that this team is going to have more negatives to deal with than positives if Dusty somehow decides to play him in center field and start him in the playoffs. I think that you have two viable options. I just get annoyed by people trying to weigh September on Jake Meyers and his average when he's been screwed around with all month. When he was at the end of July, when he was at the top of his game, he was playing every single day and he was productive. He was productive with power. He was productive with average. He was productive with the way he ran the bases. He was hyper productive in the outfield. He made some great defensive plays. And he's a younger guy. Younger guys need to be in the lineup every day rep-wise, because otherwise mentally they beat themselves up and they can create their own issues. If you just put this guy out there day after day, I believe he's the most consistent and best option in center field for this team, because Chaz doesn't hit for average. Chaz constantly has a very long, very big swing, trying to do a lot of damage. He's not going to hit for average. He's not going to try and go to the opposite way. He like I said, he has a very long looping swing that annoys me. So for the fact that in playoffs, contact matters, base hits matter, making the right play. Even the other night, a simple thing like Tucker making sure he pulled the ball to stay out of the double play and advance the runners, that's the kind of things you need to see from Chaz. I get it for the most of the year. He's been timely about getting the RBI knock or sack fly when there's a runner on third base. He's had more home runs he's had in his entire career. But you know what? Playoffs are a different animal, and you need consistency, and you need your best competency in all aspects of playing the field, hitting, and timely hitting. I just feel like it's my own gut feeling, but I believe that Jake Meyers showed enough that that's who my center fielder would be.
Chaz had that good plate appearance in the Game 1 victory against Tampa, where he was able to draw the bases-loaded walk that tied the game, that set up the Jason Castro walk-off walk. You also don't want to, you know, magnify one plate appearance on what has been a whole season for Chaz McCormick. I agree with you in the sense that I think Jake Meyers is a better baseball player than Chaz McCormick, and over the long haul, I believe we'll see that come to fruition. But right now, Jake Meyers is in the midst of a pretty bad slump. And I think what you said is true. He's kind of been messed with, and he's been sitting a lot. He's only playing against lefties and sometimes a rare start against a righty. But he's hitting 164 in September and 67 plate appearances. That's a pretty big sample. I think Dusty's going to go with the mindset of, hey, Jake Meyers is my center fielder against lefties, and Chaz McCormick's going to be my center fielder against righties. And I'm not sure that that's right. That's just my prediction of what Dusty Baker's going to do
gut?
In the playoffs.
If you had to pick the guy you want starting
just
in center
field.
Just
get all of the at-bats? Yeah, my gut's Jake Meyers. I think Jake Meyers is a better baseball player. I just don't think that Dusty Baker's going to do that. Does it enter your mind at all where you could second guess the Miles Straw trade. Like, if you look at the OPSs, like all the OPSs are roughly the same, whether it's Jake Myers, whether it's Chaz McCormick, whether it's Miles Straw. The one thing that Miles Straw is doing far better than any of those guys, though, he's getting on base 36% of the time. Getting on base 36% of the time, you're doing some good things for your offense. I think it's fair to say that Miles Straw has outplayed every center fielder for the Astros since that July 31st trade.
Oh, look, revisionist history, you can look back and say ifs, buts, candies, nuts, and your Monday morning quarterback can say they should have never made the trade. More so than anything else, I'd say that because Maton has absolutely crapped the bed.
He's been terrible.
And no matter what, this prospect, this catching prospect they got better be damn good, because otherwise you question the trade just because of the value you got back. But if the James Click and his analytics department firmly believe that they have better players in the system than what Miles Straw brought to the table, and it also rectified an issue that you had with your manager that could have lingered, then I don't question making the move. I was never enamored with Miles Straw, and I never felt like he was the long-term solution in center field anyway. And I think that if Myers, again, gets the at-bats and starts getting more and more comfortable in the major league level, he is your center fielder of the future.
I would argue Miles Straw has been the best center fielder of all those guys we just mentioned since July 31st. Is it revisionist history? Yes, absolutely. But it is something that you have to consider, and you have to, I guess, grade James Click for as well. Coming up next, Stanford Steve will join us, the Killer Bees, on ESPN at 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Cars for Kids. Look, here's the biggest thing for you guys. If you've got a vehicle laying around, it may not even be working, it's collecting rust and dust, it's a pain in the butt, but you don't want to pay to have someone tow it away. You don't want to deal with money out of your pocket to get rid of an eyesore. You don't have to. All you got to do is get in touch with Cars for Kids at carsforkids.org or call them 713-225-4226. Either way, when you tell them where you live and what you got, they're going to come to you and they're going to get it for absolutely free, no charge to you. Tow it away. It could be a motorcycle, could be a boat, it could be a trailer, a truck, an SUV. It doesn't matter. You might not even have the title for it, and they'll take care of it for you anyway. They'll find the title, and they'll turn it into resources that they're going to use to take care of kids trying to get their second chance at a degree. The money goes to be resources so these kids can focus on the books. The money all stays local through the Houston Can Academies. But really, for you, what you need to be focused on as well as that is you're going to actually benefit and not pay anything to get rid of the eyesore on your property. Because when you get rid of that vehicle, not only do you get a tax write-off, not only do you get free towing so it gets off your property. You mentioned ESPN 97.5, you get a $50 Visa gift card as well. And that's where your donation becomes resources that can be used as kids get their degree. It's a scratch your back, scratch everyone's back, absolute positive win-win situation, all created by the Houston Can Academies. They do you a favor, you're doing them a favor, and who benefits the most? The kids in the city of Houston. Check them out today, carsforkids.org, 713-225-4226, and consider donating, because at the end of the day, what it really comes down to is writing off the car, not the kid.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.